This is episode 10 of the Nothing Human podcast, Three Powers of the Human Spirit, part 10, Superiority and Submission.
I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me.
Welcome to the Nothing Human podcast. A biblically informed think space for exploring and articulating all the ways we make or break sense of human experience. I'm your host, Michael Minkoff. From my youngest days, I have been fascinated with categories of thought, those often unconscious filing mechanisms that invisibly populate our premises, direct our inquiries, and ordain our conclusions. Join me as we investigate and interrogate our assumptions in an effort to articulate a more cohesive understanding of human information within the superstructure of God's truth. Welcome back to the Nothing Human podcast. This is Michael Minkoff. We're going to talk about superiority and submission today, which is a little bit of a touchy subject, but we're going to approach it with grace and some degree of circumspection. It's not quite as scary as you might think. But before we get into that, I'd like to thank all of you that have joined me on Patreon, and I really appreciate your support. It means a whole lot to me and to my family so that I can continue to do this work and support them in the same stroke. I'm very thankful to you all, and thank you so much for engaging in the community there, and for commenting on my website, and for rating and reviewing this podcast on Apple and Spotify and all the other places. I really very much appreciate it. It means a lot to me. And so far, it has done a lot of good. With very little advertising of any kind, this podcast has already started to develop a little bit of a following. And I really appreciate all of your efforts in making that happen. And just the faithful way that you all have supported me and encouraged me as I'm working through this. I really appreciate it. So let's get into it. There are a couple of passages in Luke that, if they weren't in the Bible, I probably wouldn't be willing to say what they say. And one of them is in Luke 2:52, and it says, "And Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men." And it's clearly a quote from 1 Samuel 2:26 that says the same thing about Samuel. But it's a really interesting passage because Jesus, you would think, being absolutely perfect in every way and without any sin or error, how could he increase in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and with men? This idea seems like something that wouldn't be the case for Jesus, the perfect man. And yet, here it is in the scriptures, which indicates that possibly our understanding of what it means to be righteous and perfect is not really very complete if we think that it means that you don't change or don't grow, because Jesus, even being sinless and perfect, continued to grow and apparently continued to grow in favor even with God. The other passage, which is really similar to me, and it's also in Luke, it's in Luke 22, verses 41 through 42, and Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw, it says, and he knelt down and began to pray, saying, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done." There are other passages where Jesus talks about how the Father is greater than he is. And it's a similar kind of passage to this, where you're thinking, if Jesus is perfect, wouldn't his will, even humanly speaking, be perfect also? And if it were perfect, why would he need to submit that will to a will that is apparently different than his own? And in both of these cases, what we see, both in Jesus increasing in wisdom and stature and favor, and also this passage where he has to submit his own will, which is apparently different than his Father's, to the Father's will, you might look at that and say, okay, that means something even in perfection. And that is that a perfect human person still grows and changes. And even in sinlessness, submission is still required. So if submission of the will is necessary, even for Jesus, who is perfect, then I think we can all think submission is probably required for us as well. And it's not just a factor of our finiteness, because I think we can say that this idea of submission, the true idea of submission, and we'll get into what it doesn't mean, but for now, it's important to understand that submission is not required merely because we're limited, meaning we don't know everything or our will doesn't see the full end or these kinds of things. But I also think there is a submission that is even true for God. And the Orthodox Church has a doctrine that they call perichoresis, which literally means rotation from the Greek. But it is this idea that there is within each person of the Trinity part of the other persons of the Trinity, and that there is a dance of submission, support, and mutual identification that occurs even within the Trinity. Now, in case this is a totally foreign idea to you, I just want to point out that the idea of humility of God, if God is humble, this can't be a truth that happens after the creation of the cosmos, in the sense that he is humble toward us. He also has to be humble and loving even within himself, which means that there is a necessary submission that occurs between the persons, even within the Godhead, and there is also a necessary object of love even within the Godhead. And if love is the selfless giving of self for the benefit of another, then this idea, this doctrine of perichoresis, seems like a natural and certain necessary truth concerning the Godhead. So, with those ideas in mind, let's talk a little bit about what it means to be superior and what it means to have submission or submit ourselves to the superior. And before we can do that, because submission means a lot of things to a lot of people, and most of them are not good. And obviously, the idea of submission has been used, or the command towards submission has been used, in order to keep a lot of people in positions of abuse that are not fitting or right. So we really do have to be careful about the way we're talking about submission. So first off, submission does not mean pretense. This would be an abuse of the intellect or the affections, and it is also called eye service in the scriptures. You can see this in Ephesians 6, 5 and 6, which is talking specifically about slaves, even servants, being subject to their masters. And it says not to do it merely with eye service, but rather to do it in such a way that you are attempting to show love and true submission from the heart to the master. This is in probably a circumstance that is the most clear picture of submission of superior and inferior in the scriptures. And even there, the submission is not one of pretense or eye service, but is from the heart. It is also not coercion. Submission does not mean that a person is coerced, because that's not actually submission. If there's an abuse of the affections or will in terms of coercion, that also does not produce true submission. That is not what we're talking about here. So, not pretense, not coercion. Okay, so what do I mean by submission? Before we can talk about that, we need to understand that there's a distinction between power and authority. Authority is the right to exercise power within a specified jurisdiction or domain. And power is measured in the capacity to distribute good and evil. So there's a distinction made between power and authority. Even in the scriptures, it talks about rule, power, and authority. Rule is the domain. It's the dominion or kingdom within which power is properly exercised. Authority is the right to exercise a power to distribute good and evil within that domain. So we have those three things: rule or dominion, domain, power, and authority. And authority only functions within a domain. Meaning, the king of France can't go over to Spain and be like, hey, I'm a king in France, so I'm a king here too. You're not, because you're not in your proper domain. So a kingdom or a domain of authority is limited. And oftentimes, authority and power are not aligned. And we're going to talk about this a little bit later. But it's important to understand that some people have authority that they cannot properly wield because they do not have the power to distribute good and evil appropriately within that particular domain. And so, considering these things is important when we're talking about submission, because the first thing that submission is a recognition of power or authority. Most of us recognize power in others without really thinking about it or having to be terribly self-aware or self-conscious about it. For instance, if a really, really tall, very large, muscular man were to walk into a room, you'll notice pretty immediately that no one has to really make a decision to show him deference and respect. I'm not saying that this is necessarily right, and I'm certainly not saying that the strong man should come in and lord it over everybody else, but there is an immediate recognition that there's a power differential, and that recognition is displayed in signs of respect or deference, because you realize, if I were not to show respect or deference, this is not a person that I want to mess with, because the power differential is clearly in his favor when it comes to strength. So power differentials can occur in all sorts of different ways. It's not just strength. It's not just will. A power differential can occur also when it comes to the affections and when it comes to the intellect. And that also is usually noted. If a very smart person comes into a room and starts talking and people start listening, it doesn't take very long for people to start feeling, hey, this is a person that I should show some deference to in terms of the intellect. And if they feel really insecure and very uncomfortable, they might bully the intellectual person in order to use the power that they have in the will in order to overcome the weakness or insecurity they feel concerning the intellect. This also happens concerning the affections. When a particularly insightful or sensitive or capable affectional person comes into a room, that also is generally felt. This is a person who feels very powerfully, and if those feelings are not in your favor, you might try to use your other powers in order to subjugate this feeling of inferiority that you have or this insecurity that you feel, because you're in the presence of a greater power and you can't help but recognize that. Now, even if you're in the presence of a greater power, power does not necessarily confer authority. Meaning, sometimes authority, like we said, and power are not properly aligned. It should be the case that a person has authority to the extent that they have power. And that's not always the case. In fact, I would say it's very much not the case in many different power dynamics where a person has authority that they can't properly wield. And because of that, there are abuses that are occurring. There are also obviously a lot of cases where a person has power but no authority to exercise that power. I mean, think about like David, when he is technically anointed, but he doesn't yet have the authority of the kingdom. But he obviously has greater power than Saul to accomplish his purposes. And Saul, recognizing that, tries to use his authority to keep David out of authority so that David cannot properly exercise the power even for the benefit of the kingdom. In other words, there's all sorts of dysfunctions that occur because power and authority are not properly aligned in one direction or the other. So that's the first part of submission we need to understand, this idea of power and authority and domain. We know that the domains of the three powers are pretty distinct. They overlap, but they are distinct. So the domain or the kingdom of the affections is the world of the good, and the domain or kingdom of the intellect is the domain of the true. And the domain of the will, the kingdom of the will, is the kingdom of righteousness, the domain of righteousness. So when it comes to determining a good, distributing a good, these kinds of things, the affections should be massively involved in that. When there's a determination of true versus false, the intellect obviously is the one that has the superiority to determine those particular questions or those particular issues. And when it comes to an issue of righteousness or choice, the will should be given the authority to exercise its power in that particular domain. I hope that makes sense so far. It's really important. Because when you're talking about submission, there is both an internal and external submission. Internal submission is the fact that within your own person, your power that is actually able to exercise a particular capacity in a particular domain should be granted authority and freedom within that domain to actually pursue its particular purposes. And that means that the will should not be determining what is good versus what is evil. First and foremost, that should be left to the affections. That's the affectional domain. The will should also not be determining what is true versus what is false. That is the domain of the intellect, and the intellect should be free to do that. And this is within a person. There is a mutual submission that must occur because of different domains within a person. Meaning, in any domain where that power is properly authorized to function, the other power should not be interfering in its proper function. And that happens quite a bit. Let me give you an example. The will, which might think something is right and might say, I am right because I am doing the right thing. And then the intellect or the affections might offer a different idea. They might come in and say, actually, that isn't true. There's this piece of evidence or this piece of evidence or this piece of evidence that indicates you are not in the right. You have not followed the law. You have not done the right thing. And then the affections might come in and say, don't you see how bad you feel? Your conscience is bothering you. This is not good for you. This is not good for others. The will can overrule and say, no, I'm choosing to do this anyway, even though I know that it is not according to truth and it is not according to good. It is my right and I choose to do it. And I'm completely shutting down and silencing the proper exercise of the authority of the other powers within me. That obviously happens. Happens with the will, happens with the intellect, happens with the affections, where your primary power particularly is usually the one, as we've talked about before, that's exercising these abuses. And it's very important that within your particular person, each power is allowed to exercise its power within the domain of its authority. So you should grant authority for the free exercise of that capacity of each individual power in the domain for which it has authority. Okay? I know it's a little bit weird, maybe a little bit complicated, and it's a little different, but that is the case. It's also important to understand in this that no power is actually superior to another power. So oftentimes, though, if you have a primary power, you think that your primary power actually is superior to the other powers. And within you, you might have good reason to believe that. Because you could say, I have an extraordinary will, or I have an extraordinary intellect, or I have an extraordinary affectional capacity, but these other powers maybe are really weak in an absolute sense, and relatively speaking as well. And so you might think, well, then the primary power should rule and even rule in the areas of the other powers' domains because they don't have the capacity to exercise their authority in their domains. And when a power is transgressively disordered like this, meaning you have a power that is trampling on the domains of other powers within you, it really does need to submit itself to the other powers in order to become ordered. And that is a very, very challenging thing to do. And let's say, you know, like we said before, it's the will, and the will is unwilling to listen to the ideas, the quiet little ideas of the intellect, or the bad feelings that the affections have. And so it's stifling and holding down those truths or those feelings in order to continue to pursue its own will and really to the exclusion of the other powers. Well, what does it need to do in order to get ordered if it's transgressive like that, if it's crossing boundaries into other domains, if it's actually the king of will, but it goes over and says, hey, prophet, you know, I'm also the king over here, and I'm going to tell you what you're allowed to say, what you're allowed to believe. And it goes over to the priestly kingdom and says, hey, priest, you're not allowed to feel this way or declare this as good or declare this as cursed or declare this as a blessing. You have to do only what I tell you to do. You're totally and completely under my control, right? If that happens, if you have this throne room of the spirit situation, and you've got the king just like totally trampling on the priest, minister, and on the prophet, well, what needs to happen? Well, the king has to submit himself, or the queen has to submit herself to the other powers, even in their weakness. And that is really challenging, because what that means is you have to allow some freedom for those probably undeveloped and uncultivated powers to fail and to show themselves weak so that they can get stronger. You have to take the training wheels off and let them crash and burn a couple of times. This happens, actually, quite a bit. I'll give you an example from my own life. I was raised in an environment where I believed that feelings were intrinsically deceptive and that it was righteous, even, to suppress feelings, especially if those feelings were leading in a direction that seemed unrighteous or against the law, against God's law. And so I became a little sociopath, as I've talked about before, and I absolutely crushed my affections, which for me is a really terrible thing because my affections actually are the partner power for me. In fact, pretty closely paired with my intellectual power. And so my intellect was crushing my affections based on this idea that I had, which is that the feelings were intrinsically deceptive, not to be trusted, shouldn't be held to, needed to be pushed down into their proper place. So I'm doing this, and you know, it's destroying me inside. It's just hollowing me out, and I'm becoming a cruel and remorseless person. And so at a certain point after I met my wife and got married, I realized what damages it was doing to her and what damages this was doing to me. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to go on this journey of rehabilitating my affectional capacities and actually listening to and processing through my passions, even to see where my affections are. And it was real ugly. I mean, it was very ugly. It was powerful, unrestrained. It was like, you know, wild Mustang emotions that had never been at all in any way cultivated or structured. And it was overwhelming, not only for me, but also for the people around me. And I felt like a small, crazy, very overwhelmed and overwhelming child. And there was a lot of temptations within that for my will, which was also really weak, but at least my intellect to come in and be like, stop that. This is not acceptable. You need to stop being like this. Go back to cold, go back to numb, re-inject the soul Novocaine that kept you somewhat sedated and somewhat under control before. And thankfully, I did not do that by God's grace. And I learned to process through those powerful affections and those powerful emotions, really, in order to see where I was at and to slowly develop a better, more controlled, more self-controlled aspect in my affections so that they actually could be secure, stable, and strong and have their proper place and exercise that place within its domain. And that was a very challenging, very difficult work, but I'm extremely happy that I did it. I think that I'm probably emotionally healthy at this point. It took about 15 years. And you can just ask my wife. That was a really difficult time, both for her and for me. And we had to work together through it. And again, mutually submit to and mutually support each other in order to get through that time. It was very challenging. But here is the takeaway from that. Every power within you should be open to accountability from your other powers. The intellect generally does function as a mediator in this, and that is helpful if the intellect is able to give freedom, to grant freedom to the feelings and the choices that are being made by the other powers, because the intellect is at least able to confirm good information or intel. But if the intellect is itself dismissed or abused, a mediator or counselor beyond oneself is usually necessary. Now, when you're talking about submission, though, you can't really talk about it without talking about submission to others. And even if there is a certain kind of perichoresis of your own, where the three powers inhabit and mutually support and submit to one another, there is also the sense in which, as a community, we're also presenting the image of God and this mutual support, submission, and identity that occurs in communities as well. And within that mutual support, submission, and identity, there is the necessity for the recognition of the power and authority of others. So this is what I believe submission to be, and we'll talk through this definition a little bit more so that we can break it apart and see the various different ways that this works out. So my definition of submission, and it's a little bit complicated, so I'm sorry, but we'll break it down. Like I said, voluntarily lending your capacities to another person's desire, intention, or idea in the limited sphere of their authority or power to accomplish or realize that desire, intention, or idea to the benefit and service of the other person and your community. I'll say this again, because I understand there are a lot of parts here. Voluntarily lending your capacities to another person's desire, intention, or idea in the limited sphere of their authority or power to accomplish or realize that desire, intention, or idea to the benefit and service of the other person and your community. So notice that this is voluntary. It has to be voluntary. Submission is not submission, like we said before, if it is coerced. If you have been forced to do something, if your will or your affections or your intellect have been forced by power, by another person's power, that is not submission. You might call it submission if you're afraid and you cower and you passively do what another person has you do for some mercenary reason, either the avoidance of harm or fear or the pursuit of some good. That is not true submission. That is not a voluntary action, and so it is not true submission. Secondly, we're talking about lending your capacity to another person's desire, intention, or idea. So notice this can occur in any of the three powers. Usually when we think about submission, and it makes sense that we do, but usually when we think about submission, we're talking about the submission of wills, one will to another will. But in truth, submission can occur in any of the three powers because there could be, obviously, another person who has a desire, an intention, or an idea, meaning they have a desire of the affections, an intention of the will, or an idea of the intellect that is not your own, that is different than the one that you have. And submitting to them in this would involve voluntarily lending your capacities in that particular power in order to attempt to accomplish or realize that desire, intention, or idea that is not your own. And this is not the same thing as crushing your own will or your own desire or your own intention. It is rather an expansion of your own will, your own intention, your own desires, your own ideas. It's not a limitation of it. And this is really important. Submission is not about limiting. Submission is about expanding. It's about taking on another person's desire, intentions, or idea. It's not about curtailing or destroying or crushing your own. Think about how God could take on flesh. Now, you might think in order for God to take on flesh, this would be a severe limitation of his Godhead. But within the Christian idea, God taking on flesh is an addition. Incarnation is additional, not subtractional. God didn't cease being God, limit himself down to finiteness. He took on flesh, meaning he was fully God, and he also added to himself being fully human. There is a sense of submission here, obviously, to our service. But I want you to understand this is an expansion, not a contraction that is occurring there. And in the same way, submission is an expansion of your will, not a limitation of it. If it feels like a limitation of it, it's more than likely because it is pretense or coercion that's occurring, not really submission. So it is also, I also want to indicate, it is not universal. Notice I say, in the limited sphere of their authority or power, meaning that a person who does not have authority or power in a particular sphere is not able to command your submission. Submission is only commanded in an area, and it's, again, commanded by God, only in an area where another person has the authority or the power to command it properly, meaning it would be proper in this area. Why? Why is it proper? There is a differential between you and other people in any particular domain of the powers, meaning in the domain of the good, there are people who have greater capacity when it comes to the good, meaning greater affectional capacity than you do, meaning in that sphere of the affections, meaning the distribution of goods and the assessment of goods, you are not more powerful than that other person, and you should do your best to attempt to adopt or lend your capacities to that person's desire or that person's idea, because it's likely that it's actually better than yours, and you would only be hurting yourself to limit yourself to your own perspective if there is a person around you who actually has greater capacity in that particular domain. But this is still limited. Because even if we were to say that you are superior in one power over another, this is not a universal superiority. This doesn't mean, oh, well, because you're superior in this area, you're superior in every area. Even an authority, when we're talking about an authority of government, is not necessarily superior to the people who are following that leader. A leader is only given any jurisdiction in the area of choices and collective choices, not even individual choices. A leader is not necessarily allowed to tell each individual what they may or may not do, but only as it relates to their jurisdiction for the collective good and for decisions that need to be collective. So it's very limited. Jurisdiction is always very limited. No one has universal jurisdiction over everyone else aside from God. And if you notice the way that he deals with this particular universal jurisdiction, he is extremely interested in freedom, in the voluntary action of human beings. He does not coerce. He could, but he does not. Even though he has the power to, he does not. He gives us freedom, and he even set us free from our own bondages for the sake of freedom, it says. So he's very committed to that. All the more, we should be committed to that for the sake of others. So no person without right, meaning authority, may command submission in any particular jurisdiction. And even if they do have authority, they're only allowed to command anything that is within their jurisdiction and according to agreements that have been made in that jurisdiction. So no human has the power to command, for instance, love or assent. It's just not, it's not even possible. You can't, you could command, hey, love this. It's not going to work. You can say, hey, believe this. It's not going to work. People have ultimately freedom to love or to agree. And the only thing that can be coerced is behavior, choices. And that's because wills can coerce wills. But again, shouldn't even be doing that. More than likely, you should work to persuade. You should work within your sphere of authority, if you are given submission, in order to create an environment where people want to and are persuaded to follow along with your desire, intention, or idea. But submission, no, we're talking about submission, not the exercise of authority, but the exercise of submission, is still voluntarily giving your power to another person's desire, intention, or idea in the limited sphere of their authority or power to accomplish or realize the desire, intention, or idea to the benefit and service of the other person and your community. The point here is to benefit the other person. And many times you can tell that a submission is pretend or coerced in the sense that there's no desire to accomplish or realize the desire, intention, or idea of the other person. In fact, you might go along with what they're asking you to do, but it's almost like you want to see it fail. And even if you're not intentionally or consciously trying to get it to fail, there's an idea of, let's see, let's go ahead and do it. And then you give some really, really half-hearted attempt to follow through on just the externals of what they're asking you to do. And then when it fails because of your lack of effort or your lack of intentionality, you go, oh, see, it was a terrible idea to begin with, because that's really what you wanted to accomplish, not the accomplishment of their desire, intention, or idea through the power that you have available to you, but rather to show that their idea or desire or intention was actually bad, was actually off, and that yours is better, right? And when everybody's doing this in a community, that's a terribly dysfunctional community, and they're not really going to be able to work together very well. A number of times on this podcast, I've encouraged us to submit ourselves one to another. It is a scriptural command. We are commanded in Ephesians 5:17 to be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. This is everybody. Submission is not optional. As I said before, submission is required, whether in your strength or in your weakness, whether you are a leader or a follower. We submit in our strengths to the benefit and support of our neighbors in their weakness, and we submit in our weaknesses to the leadership and authority of our neighbors in their strength. In any environment, there will be superior and inferior powers in absolute terms. So, in an environment where everything is properly named and everything is properly ordered, those with superior powers in any given context or community should have authority in their domains of superiority. Examples. Okay, so since the father will generally have the most powerful will in a family unit, his will should be primary in the domain of the will for his family. And this has to do with decision-making for the family, rule-setting, and enforcement, etc. There might be exceptions to this where the father's will isn't the dominant will in the family unit. And in those cases, whatever is the dominant will should have the authority that is in keeping with that power. I'm talking absolute power. Whoever has the absolute strength of will should have authority to exercise that superiority for the benefit of the family. Again, God tells us how we're supposed to exercise this power, and it is in submission to the benefit and value of the other. Notice, when it says, wives, submit to your husbands, because generally speaking, like we've said, the wife is probably not going to be at the same level of will as her husband, so it makes sense that she should submit to the so that she should grant authority or respect authority that is aligned with greater power. However, when you look at the husband, it says, husbands, lay down your lives for the sake of your wives, as Christ did for the church. That is a very, very heavy command. And what it means is that this exercise of power isn't selfish. If it is selfish, it's abusive. You're abusing your power. The exercise of power is always for the benefit and service of the weakness of others, meaning because of the strength that I have, I can support and benefit you even where you are weak. If it is instead lording over weakness, taking advantage of weakness, being Amalekites, you know, picking off the people who are slow and sick and old in the back, well, that's disgusting and satanic. And we should absolutely reject that exercise of power. It is one of the reasons why submission is so difficult, because the exercise of power is so often abusive. So cut that out. Don't do that. But at the same time, it doesn't excuse the necessity of submission when there is obviously a superior power that should be granted the authority in its domain of power. Fathers, generally speaking, that's the case. There are exceptions, but that's generally the case. And the mother will almost certainly, again, generally, have the most cultivated affectional power, and so her affection should be primary in the domain of the affections, meaning the goods management and distribution within the house, hospitality, assessment of flourishing, and when it comes to feelings and the assessment of feelings and the assessment of that kind of information, which is necessary information for making good, practical, productive rules. If the husband has the greater power of will, the wife still should have access to the husband in those areas of overlap where she's saying, here, these are things you need to pay attention to or hear out because you're not sensing them, but I am. And this will help you to exercise your will better in its particular domain if you listen to the superiority of my affections in its powerful domain. If that makes sense, that's just in those two areas. And really, honestly, it works in all sorts of ways like that, not just within the family unit, but also in churches and also in communities. Now, here's where things get very complicated, because in many environments, power and authority are not properly aligned, and this creates all sorts of problems. Navigating this is basically the most difficult thing, in my opinion, in terms of submission. Authority really should extend to all the powers. So there is an authority of the mind, and there's an authority of the will, and there's an authority of the affections, and they should be allowed to operate in their domains freely of truth, righteousness, and good. And usually, though, you know, the government, whether it's family government or church government or state government, even though it only applies formally to the will, because you can't tell people, again, like we said, what to believe or how to love or what to love. And so the authority of the government really does only apply to the will formally. And this makes a lot of sense, especially, as we've said before, that will orientation is the most common orientation, with external standard being the most common in that. Well, if the authority or government generally only applies formally to the will, this actually does apply and function really well in most environments, because the will determines behavior. It's the only part of another person you can command, and most people are will-oriented, so they interface really well with will-oriented systems. However, the will really doesn't have authority to abuse or dismiss the other powers, particularly in their domains, but it often does. So especially when authority is granted to someone who does not actually have the power to wield it, abuses are basically inevitable. And one of the reasons for that, and this is even in the case of the will, is that it takes way more willpower to be patient than it does to be controlling. It takes more power to do good than it does to do evil. And so if you don't have enough power to exercise properly and patiently and self-sacrificially your position of authority, then you are almost always going to be tempted to figure out some way of establishing your power through evil, which means you're going to have to use intimidation and extraordinary shows of force in order to keep people in fear so that you have some degree of respect, because that respect hasn't been earned and it can't be earned because you don't have the power to earn it. Again, what we said, the recognition of power is something that you really don't have to tell people. It's automatic. It's involuntary. When you recognize power, you recognize it. It is, you know, greater than you, superior to you. If a person in authority doesn't have that power, they're not going to have the respect that is owing to their authority, even if they have that position. And that creates a lot of temptation on the part of that powerless authority to attempt to do evil or do fearful things in order to match up their power to their level of authority, even though they don't actually have power, if that makes sense. So they actually use the power that's granted to the authority in order to try to gain some degree of honor or respect, which isn't really fitting to them, and everybody knows it, and it's really silly. It's kind of pathetic. And you see this. I mean, we all see it, right? We see this all the time. And the other issue is, even if you do have authority in terms of government, that doesn't necessarily mean you're superior in every way. And it certainly does not mean that you have the authority to exercise power in a domain that isn't in the will and in a domain that isn't collective. So with all of that in mind, I want to say, too, that meekness is not weakness, that the humility to submit yourself to the service of another, even at your own harm, is not a weakness. There is a weakness that is yielding and passive because it simply doesn't have the power to resist, so it doesn't even bother trying. But meekness is not that. Meekness is yielding even when you don't have to. And there's a beauty to meekness, even though externally it might look like weakness. There's a power in meekness that is something totally different than the power of evil. It's a superior power. And I'm going to read a quote from Friedrich Nietzsche from his book, Thus Spake Zarathustra, because I think this really does encapsulate it really well. When power becomes gracious and descends into the visible, such descent I call beauty. And there is nobody from whom I want beauty as much as from you who are powerful. Let your kindness be your final self-conquest. Of all evil, I deem you capable. Therefore, I want the good from you. Verily, I have often laughed at the weaklings who thought themselves good because they had no claws. End quote. So that's a great quote from Nietzsche. I really like it. And interestingly, he thought that the meekness of Christianity and Judaism was actually a weakness, that we were weak. And because we were weak, we attempted to turn weakness into a virtue so that we could actually turn that weakness into a virtue and then use that virtue in order to gain a power that wasn't right or properly ours. But that's not the same as the meekness of Jesus. Jesus held himself on the cross. Jesus did not need to die on the cross. He could have chosen differently. He chose to submit himself for our benefit and for our good. And he held himself patiently on the cross for our sake. And God himself has submitted himself to our benefit in so many different ways, even from the beginning. And if we're going to be like God, we have to learn both how to submit ourselves to the benefit of others in our strength, but also to submit ourselves to the authority and superiority of others in our weakness. And only in these particular ways are we truly going to represent God in a way that is fitting and productive. And that means that those who have authority should have authority because they have the power to wield it, and they should exercise and wield that power for the sake of those that are following. And for those who are following, we really should voluntarily submit ourselves in order to try to accomplish the desires, intentions, or ideas of those who are in authority over us, even if they're in authority over us without the power to wield it. Why don't we also lend them our power, grant them our power? God sees that. God will see and God will reward that. And you might be surprised when you learn to voluntarily submit how much bigger of a person you become and how much bigger other people become, way beyond what you could have imagined, way beyond what you thought was possible. So I'm going to close today with a poem that I wrote that's on this topic of God's submission to us in our weakness, and it's called God Holds the Cup with Two Hands. My daughter was watching me, I hadn't realized, when I lifted the pint glass to my lips with one hand. She, like her daddy, grasped the curve of her plastic cup with the squat digits of one hand, lifted it a few inches from the table, and poured it out on the ground. When I slowed the seep of water with a towel, I sopped up her distress, too, with, "It's okay. You need to use two hands. But it's okay, baby. It's just water. Daddy will clean it up." God didn't need 6 days. He could have lifted creation out of nothing in a moment. God didn't need to rest on that first Sabbath. He doesn't need rest. But we do. So that man that God became, because he knew we were watching, on the night we betrayed him, he took the cup, himself, with two hands, and God, because he knew we were watching, He raised the cup with two hands and poured it out on the ground. Thank you all for listening. I will be back with a couple more episodes on the three powers, and then we'll start doing some bonus episodes. So if you have questions or anything like that, go ahead and ask me on the website on the appropriate episode, and I'll probably consolidate all of those things and try to create a few bonus episodes where I answer some questions and clarify some issues that you had. So if you have confusion about any of these things, or if you want additional clarity, please do comment and engage on my website. Thank you all for already engaging. I really appreciate it. It means so much to me. And for all your support, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon. Bye. Oh, and Merry Christmas. And Happy New Year.
I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. Nothing human. Nothing.